right. Hey, hey, welcome to the show. I want to thank everybody for tuning in tonight and being a part of Rockers in Recovery Radio. Our second guest coming up tonight is Dr. Rachel Needle, and she'll be talking about substance abuse disorder treatment in the industry here, specifically in South Florida, in response to a recent New York Times article and the Megyn Kelly's show. Megyn Kelly's show, I think it was called Florida Shuffle, and then the New York Times wrote, Haven for Recovery, Recovering Addicts Now Profits from Relapses. I believe, in my own opinion, I've been in South Florida and the Florida area for many, many years, and came down here in the early 90s and came through treatment. And by the grace of God, you know, I've had a lot of people that have supported me personally in my own personal recovery in the South Florida community, including treatment center owners and treatment center people that went out of their way while I was struggling and going through the things that I was going through before I got clean. And these people just opened up their arms and did everything humanly possible to help me. In some cases, I wasn't ready. And because I wasn't ready, you know, that had no bearing on them. That had a bearing on me. I had to get to a point where I was ready and committed to doing something with my recovery. If I'm not ready and not committed, then I'm going to get the same things that I always got in the past, and that's no results. So I can't blame that on anybody but me. And part of the problem that I foresee is that, you know, you can't tag a whole community or a whole state and say that people aren't doing what they need to do to help others, because I believe they are. Do I believe that there's some people that are very corrupt and doing what they need to do to just, you know, line their pockets? Yes, I do. There's always bad apples in every bunch. I don't care who you're dealing with. But here, I need to be able to express that for myself, I have had major, major help from the South Florida community. And to all of those organizations that helped me, places like St. Luke's, places like G&G, Holistic Addiction Treatment Program, Transitions, these are all people that were back in the day. And there's a lot of them today that do great work. I want to right now go to the phones, and we're going to talk to Dana Michelle. And Dana Michelle is a local South Florida outreach coordinator, and she helps individuals who struggle with substance abuse. Dana, she's going to be talking to us tonight about her personal recovery, but also her passion for helping others. Her recovery journey started July of 2011, so she's in her celebration month. Let's bring Dana on and talk to her about it. Dana, how you doing tonight?
I'm good. How are you?
Great. Hey, listen, thanks for being on the show. Thanks for being a part of Rockers in Recovery Radio. Give us a little
Absolutely.
Bit of background on how your recovery journey started back in July 2011.
Well, it's funny because you're talking about, like, South Florida and South Florida treatment. Like, I'm a local. I was born and raised in South Florida. And I also got clean in South Florida, and I went to treatment. And it was actually my first spiritual awakening that I had, which was on July 4th of 2011. And I was sitting there and I was like sick and tired of my old ways. I was broken, beaten, lost. I was just emotionally numb. And I was sitting there in the grass looking at the fireworks. And I was like, you know what? Fireworks represents independence. And here I am so codependent on something so mood and mind altering. Like I want to get my independence. And so I went to treatment, and treatment was one of the best things for me because I was that type of addict that, like, I needed that bubble, and I needed to learn about what my triggers were. I needed to learn about the people, places, and things that I needed to change my playmates and my playgrounds and learn some of my core issues and where it really stems from. And it wasn't until, like, I got honest with myself and I went into treatment that I was able to see that. So my clean date is July 6th of 2011, and we will be celebrating 6 years by the grace of God, as long as I don't pick up a day at a time. And I'm completely grateful for that. Like, recovery has completely changed my life, my outlook on life, my perception, everything.
Do you believe, and I was talking about it at the beginning of the show, do you believe that, you know, you have to be plugged in and you have to be willing and ready to do this and be committed to it? Or it won't work? Do you believe that?
I believe that everybody has a different circumstance. I know for me that I had to be completely done. I knew that at the end of the road, which it was the end of my road, that I couldn't continue living the lifestyle that I was living. I wasn't forced. I was the type of addict that, like, I was in trouble, and I was in the court system for a year and a half, and they tried to lock me up. They tried to court order me to treatment, and because I'm a rebellious type of individual, that if you force something on me, I'm not going to want to do it. So after everything and I got out of the court system, I went in. So for me, for this addict, I had to be done, and nobody can force me. And as soon as that was happening, I had opened my mind. And they say that, like, you can't graft an idea on a closed mind. And the reason why is because if it's closed, they're not hearing anything. But if I'm open, they'll be able to plant that seed for me. And that's exactly what had happened for me.
Do you think that when you're working on yourself and you started to commit to your recovery, that process for you really helped you to understand your own passion for wanting to help others?
Absolutely. You know, growing up, I always knew that I liked helping people, right? And I thought that I always wanted to be a lawyer and help, like, individuals. But what I came to find out is that, like, I do like to help individuals. And, like, my end destination has become a therapist in the federal prisons. And it's because, like, I want to be able to help the people that people tend to forget about, that people, like, even in the 12-step fellowships, people can be like, oh, here comes this individual picking up a white chip or a white key tag again. And, like, they're dampening the flame of desire for them instead of fanning it. And I want to be that individual to, like, help fan that flame and help boost them to want to do better for themselves. And, like, I only know that because, like, it was done for me, and that's where it really stems from. Like, I remember when I was first trying to get clean in 2009, like, people would sit there and talk bad about me and, like, what I looked like. And, like, there was that one person who believed in me, and it took me 2 years to get it, but I finally got it. So my passion is to help the individual, even the most difficult individual, to be able to help them understand that, like, there is a new way of life. You just have to be able to willing to do it. Like, I can guide you, but you have to do the footwork yourself.
I think it's pretty scary at times because you just mentioned something. I love your answer. But one of the things that's amazing is that I think we talk about the stigma on the outside, and people in the community and the stigma of addiction. There's stigma right in our own communities, the recovery communities. You were just talking about it. Somebody that's struggling. Not everybody, but there are people that will stigmatize that person, that will say things and bring that person to a place of not even wanting to go back to deal with their issues because of, you know, how they're feeling about, you know, being lambasted or whatever else the emotional processes in you know, with some of the people and what they do in the recovery community. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I agree. I see people, like, when people go to meetings, and, like, I kind of sit, like, back and, like, observe, and, like, I see people that are just so into their cliques and, like, not going up to the newcomer and welcoming them and, like, saying, like, here's my number, this or that. Like, you know, like, it's funny because someone had reached out to me through Facebook. They're like, I need an assignment. I'm like, you need to talk to your sponsor. And they're like, my sponsor told me to get my assignment from you. And I said, okay, great. I was like, here's the assignment. I was like, for every white key tag that picks up, because the individual was a male, I said, go up to them, get their phone number, and reach out to them for 30 days. Because sometimes it's hard for an individual to feel welcome, especially when they sit back and they watch everybody within their cliques and they don't feel welcome. Like, we want to be able to welcome the newcomer and the individual as a whole to be able to make it easier for a transition for them to be accepted. Because for me, for this addict, all I ever wanted to B was accepted, because I never accepted myself, and only through the process of recovery have I been able to learn to accept myself. But if it wasn't for the people that loved me until I could love myself, I probably wouldn't be here.
You know, Dana is a huge heart, and she gives back, and of course she is an outreach coordinator for a local treatment program in South Florida, and she is willing to take phone calls from people at 954-588-3696. Please feel free to give her a call. In closing, Dana, you are now into the process of getting people into treatment and helping people, how does that process work and what do you do? I mean, how does it work for somebody to go through that process? Paint a picture for them.
Well, honestly, the individual, it's either like a loved one that's reaching out or the actual individual themselves. And like when they reach out and they say that they're struggling, like I kind of just hold up a mirror for them as a reflection so they can see the unmanageability in their own life. And once they see it and they realize that, like, listen, like I need help or I'm going to die, like then we start that process. For instance, I had an individual reach out to me and she was a personal friend from 12-Step Fellowship. And like, she's struggling right now. She's fighting the disease of addiction as we speak. And like every other day, she'll be like, I want to go to treatment. I don't want to go to treatment. I want to go to treatment. I don't want to go to treatment. And like, I'm just talking to her. And finally, she's like, you know what? I want to go to treatment. So we started the whole process. Each individual is different. Some people will just be like, listen, like, I'm ready to go. Let's go. And like they're right, they go right through the process. They get on the phone with admissions talks to them. They walk them through the process. Like the whole thing of my end, admissions end, and getting to the door of treatment is just to make sure that the client is as comfortable as possible while understanding that they have a disease of addiction that they need to be able to treat. And as me, I went to school to become a recovery coach support specialist. I'm there to be their mirror. I'm there to help them understand and point out and have them get to those aha moments on their own. Because for me, I wouldn't do anything to anybody that I wouldn't want done to me. So for me, I have them to help them realize it. Because if you told me, I would tell you, like, listen, bro, like, I don't see what you're talking about.
Dana can be reached again at 954-588-3696. Is that correct? 3696.
Yes.
And, you know, one of the things that we're going to close with real quick is that there's a lot of people struggling right now with the epidemic across this country. And if you had to say something to a loved one dealing with a family member, what would you say?
Honestly, there's a lot of loved ones that have like a family member that are struggling. And my personal experience is that my grandparents were ashamed of who I was and they didn't want to talk about it publicly. But until they were able to reach out to someone, because someone that had helped save my life, who was also in a 12-step fellowship, until she spoke up and until she reached out her hand and learned about addiction, the process of me getting help didn't start. So if there's someone out there struggling or has a loved one struggling, like, speak up. Like, it doesn't matter how much you think they're going to get mad at you. It doesn't matter, like, what you think. Like, it's going to help save their life. Like, my grandmother sent me to jail and kept me in jail. And as much as I was mad at her, like, she helped save my life. And, like, I love her for that because, like, a lot of codependency issues are there with me and my grandmother. So if, like, I got mad at her, but in reality, she was having my best interest. And like, there's like a quote that they said that, like, how do you know if you're enabling? Like, says if the addict is happy with your behavior, you're probably enabling. If the addict isn't happy with your behavior, it means that you're doing the right thing. And that's exactly what had happened. You know, when I was in treatment, my therapist had painted a picture for my grandmother because she was my biggest enabler. And, what they did, because they had offered a family program, he drew a picture and he drew a tombstone. And in the tombstone, it said, rest in peace, Dana. Her grandmother loved her to death. And ever since then, our relationship started to change. So all I can say is don't stay quiet and please stick your hand out. Because if you stick your hand out, someone will grab your hand and pull you up and help you to the best of the ability that you allow them to help you.
Great stuff. Dana, thanks for being with us tonight. 954-588-3696. You can catch Dana just by giving her a call and asking her any questions. You can also, what's your email that they can reach out to you at, Dana?
It's Dana D. Gonzalez, D as in Dana, Gonzalez, G-O-N-Z-A-L-E-Z, at Amethyst, A-M-E-T-H-Y-S-T, Recovery, recovery.org.
Great stuff. Thanks for being on the show. We look forward to having you back in the future for sure.
All right. Thank you. Have a great night.
YouTube. Great guys. Great person, great energy. I mean, it's all about energy, and it's all about, you know, giving back to the community. And when you think about it, somebody that, you know, was struggling and struggling and struggling and now gets to be able to help other people is an amazing process. And you know something? Dana is the type of person that it doesn't matter if you have funds, you don't have funds, it doesn't matter. She's there. She's there to help people and to help them get through the process. And that is what I was learned, you know, what I was taught here in South Florida by many, many people, as I said at the beginning of this show, is that it doesn't matter if I had anything or I didn't have anything. There were people that reached out to me and helped me. So I want to bring on our next guest, and of course, Dr. Rachel is with us. Dr. Rachel, welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Shedding light. It's great to have you. Shedding light on treatment for substance use disorder in Florida. And you wrote an article in the Huffington Post on HuffPost on their blog. And it seems that you were having some issues. We talked about this at the very beginning, and I can understand why. You know, the New York Times wrote an article about South Florida. Megyn Kelly's past show, the Florida Shuffle, all of these things were coming into play, and I'm sure that it became aggravating for somebody that, you know, has labored long and hard, and, you know, to get you're a psychiatrist or a psychologist. On top of that, you've worked diligently in the community. You had to go through getting your education and then helping people. It must be frustrating for you.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, my frustration started with, you know, just the inconsistencies and as well as the, I guess, just people not understanding what even the terms mean. So we're talking about all of these different things and that we have problems in the industry, and nobody is completely clear on what it is we're talking about. So it's all getting grouped into this, like we're the same thing. And I think that started, you know, my frustration.
Okay, so check this out. What is, and we're just going to go, you wrote this great blog. So let's go through it. And it's posted, by the way, if you go to at Rockers in Recovery on Facebook, it's posted. It's actually pinned to the top. You can read it. What is the difference between a sober home and a treatment center?
Yeah, and that's a really important difference. So sober homes are group homes where people in recovery live together. And this is a, you know, there's different models. And, you know, this is something that's been, you know, we've had a lot of in Florida for a long time. And it's been a very positive part of our recovery community because it allows people in different, at different periods in their recovery to be in a structured environment. You go from, you know, more structured and more supervision to sort of less over time. And there's not treatment in a sober home. There are a lot of sober homes where most of the people or all of the people that are living there are currently in treatment, but that's not a requirement for most sober homes.
So the big problem that we foresee here in the industry that you talk about is that there is some corruption. Listen, not everybody falls into that category. So, you know, what is the difference between how do you know as a parent or a loved one or a guardian that's calling up, how can you find those things out? How do you know that they're doing the right thing?
So, and that's a really great question. I just want to start with, you know, there is a lot of corruption. Like you said, there is corruption in every industry that exists. There are going to be people that are not doing the right thing. So it's no different here. And I don't think, you know, a lot of times we're being led to believe that it is higher in this industry than others. But right now there's just a spotlight, you know, microscope really on this industry. It's happening in every industry. We heard about years ago, we're South Florida, so we hear about Medicare fraud all the time, right? There's a spotlight on that. You know, there was a spotlight on that a couple years ago. So it's happening in every area in healthcare it happens a lot. So that doesn't mean that everybody in the industry is like that. Actually, most of the people in the industry are doing the right thing and ethically. So I just wanted to sort of, you know, reiterate that because I think it's very important. You know, for loved ones, I think there's a lot of things. First of all, be as involved as possible. Ask questions to get to know where you're sending your child. So, again, treatment centers are places where people who are struggling with substance use disorder will go to actually get treatment. So we'll start with that. If you're trying to figure out what is the best place to send your child or your loved one, friend, ask questions like, you know, who is your clinical director? What is the, you know, philosophy of your program? How often does, you know, will somebody see a medical physician? What is the medical physician's background that they're going to be seeing? I think it's a great idea for, you know, to make sure that there's an actual, I mean, a lot of times, substance use disorder, which obviously is in the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual mental disorder, so it's considered a mental illness, overlaps and is with other mental illnesses. So you want to make sure that the person that you're sending is going to have access to a psychiatrist or somebody who specializes not just in addiction medicine, but in mental health as well, to be able to really tease out what's going on there. A lot of times we confuse, you know, which one came first. And we can't really treat one without treating the other. Try to find out who else, who are the other staff, what is somebody's day typically like. Go down, visit the place, meet the people that are going to be working with your friend or loved one. You know, those are a couple good things to start with.
I think that part of the issue is that, in my case, and I'm just going to talk from my own personal experience, and
sure,
I talked about it at the top of the hour, one of the things that happened for me was that I came here 25 years ago to go to treatment. Now, because, in my opinion, I wasn't ready, I went back out, and I went back out for several years. You know, so one of the things that I look at sometimes in frustration is I see a lot of people blaming people, and if the addict sometimes isn't ready, they're not ready. And unfortunately, you know, death happens. That's, you know, with the addiction, death happens. So it's not always, you know, going to fall on the clinician in the recovery place.
Absolutely.
Now, do I believe that some are responsible? Yeah, some of the things that just took place, you know, with Chapman and the rest of those guys, it was nuts. That was insane.
Sure.
But not everybody is like that. Not everybody is like that. Not everybody's going to be that way. So I believe that you have to understand that if you're sending your child somewhere, you're sending someone or a loved one somewhere, you need to understand that they have to be just as committed too.
Yeah, and I think those are important points because, you know, I talk about ambivalence a lot. Ambivalence is almost always part of substance use disorder, whether it's that they're not ready at all, like you said, you know, you weren't ready, or that it comes up when they are ready, right? We all are going to be ambivalent at some point in our recovery. And, you know, in terms of taking responsibility, you know, I'm not one to talk about blame. I talk about responsibility. And I think as a society, we need to take responsibility for what's going on. And, you know, I don't want to kind of hijack the time with that because I could go on and on about that. But going to write something about that very soon. But, you know, I think that's really important. And the other thing is, you know, when you put so many people, right, who are seeking treatment, so they already, you know they have a substance use disorder, in one place, it's not surprising that we're going to see an increase in overdose and deaths. I mean, if you put everybody who has cancer at one hospital to get treatment and they all live in this, you know, 1 mile radius, it's not going to be surprising that you're going to see deaths, right? That is part of what happens in this arena, unfortunately. And the deaths aren't necessarily all being caused because of the substance use disorder. They're being caused because we have synthetic drugs on the street that are, you know, 100,000 times more potent than what they're used to taking. It's being caused because we have people that, you know, aren't using for a long time, whose tolerance is changing, going out and starting to use again and not realizing that they don't need as much as they used to take. You know, and there's a number of reasons, but it's not all because of the community. It's not even all half of because of the community. Yet we like to, you know, have a place to put blame because we need that. I mean, we don't like to take responsibility as a society.
I love your commitment to this. And your article, again, is up at Rockers in Recovery on Facebook. It's at Rockers in Recovery on Facebook. Check it out. You can go right to the top. It's pinned to the top of our page there. And you can read it. And I think that, you know, the levels of care in the treatment center is important. You went over that. I think that, you know, understanding some of the realities of the industry, responses to recent media stories, you know, you highlighted that. And one of the things that I want to get into with that, too, is that, you know, when you have the media coming out and they're saying, hey, listen, you know, everything's bad there, you know, because, I mean, that's basically what they said, in my opinion. What it does is it ruins the opportunity for somebody that might, you know, it might save their life. And in the end, as far as the media is concerned, what would you say to the media as a whole?
I'd say be more responsible in your reporting. And I did say that when I spoke to several of the producers. You know, it's unfortunate that we're painting that picture because we have a real opportunity here to help people. We used to be known in a very positive light for our recovery community, for our treatment centers. And because of a few, you know, I'll say a few bad apples, that is being flipped to a very negative portrayal of an industry that does a lot of really good work in South Florida. So I'd say, you know, be responsible, do your due diligence, and have an equally balanced story on the other side of what's really going on. You know, we know that's not going to happen necessarily. I mean, I think that, you know, that doesn't sell, unfortunately.
Mm. And it comes down to, you know, if you look at the big picture, the media will tell everybody that there's so many overdoses happening here, which they are. I mean, there is no doubt that it's off the chain, but it's off the chain everywhere.
Absolutely.
You know, you're looking at Ohio, West Virginia, New Mexico, New Hampshire, Utah. These are all states that the overdose rates are higher than what they are here in South Florida or in the state of Florida. So I think that you're absolutely right. There just happens to be this microscope. And I think some really bad press came off of the people that were not doing the right thing. And listen, he deserves every 27 years he's got. Plus more.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the other thing is we're oftentimes talking about the overdoses in South Florida and sober homes interchangeably as well. And what we're forgetting is, you know, besides the other states where overdoses are happening and there aren't all these quote-unquote sober homes, right, is that not all the overdoses that we're seeing are people that have been in treatment or are living in sober homes. People are overdosing, period.
Unbelievable stuff. Where can they find you? How can they find you? Give our listeners some information on you.
Yeah, so as you mentioned, I'm Dr. Rachel Needle. I'm a clinical psychologist right here in West Palm Beach, Florida, actually. I'm not sure where you're located. I can be reached at 561-721-6400 or at Dr. Rachel Needle, DrRachelNeedle at gmail.com. I'm also, I consult for a number of centers around here helping people to strengthen their clinical programs and do that in an ethical way. I'm the clinical director at Seacrest Recovery Center in Boynton Beach, Florida, and the director of health information and substance abuse expert for Freedom from Addiction, and a clinical consultant right now at Palm Beach Recovery Group in Lake Worth. So I'm around, and please do feel free to go to my Facebook page, follow me on Twitter, and send me an email if I can do anything at all or if you have any questions.
Dr. Rachel.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's been a pleasure. I look forward to having you back and, you know, talking more about this. I think it's it definitely, as we say, shedding a light on treatment for substance use disorder in Florida, and it needs to be known that the right thing is being done. And, you know, we get to work with lots of people and help lots of people. And that's what the bottom line is helping people.
Absolutely. So, well, thank you
thank
for
you.
Having me and for all the good work that you do in getting this information out there.
You bet. Thanks again. We'll talk soon.
Okay. Bye.
Guys, thanks for tuning in. You got Rockers in Recovery. You know, if you don't know what Rockers in Recovery is, we are a media company. We're dedicated to carrying the message of addiction recovery education. We do it through music, news, events, festivals taking place within and not limited to the clean and sober community. We've been around since 2008. Rockers in Recovery is trademarked, is privately owned, and of course we love doing lots of great stuff around the country and, you know, in Florida. We do it everywhere. Our next gig coming up is the Free Love of Recovery Music Festival, September 9th, 2017, 12 p.m. to 5 p.m., and that's in Kirby Park at 160 Market Street, Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. You can check it out. The sponsors for that event is Rockers in Recovery Cafes, Atlantic Biotech, Clearbrook Treatment Centers, The Shores Treatment and Recovery, Amethyst Recovery Center, New England Recovery and Wellness, Little Creek Lodge, Hope and Grace Recovery Center, and Sobriety Unplugged. Those are the folks that are helping us put that on. We are, of course, out of Florida, Rockers in Recovery. That's where we started out in 2008, but we are all over the country and do things like this. And it is a free event. We make it free to the community, so that way you can come out, you can be educated, you can find out what's happening. And, of course, this event, we have three places that we're working with, Little Creek Lodge Foundation. We are also working with, of course, Clearbrook Treatment Centers and their foundation. And this is all in helping people to save a life and get a bed. We are raising money at each one of these at the event for each one of these organizations. We also have the SAMI Foundation that we are working with. SAMI Foundation is a really, really cool place. And, you know, we are definitely looking forward to having them a part of Rockers in Recovery up there at the festival.
Keep coming back. Give your better to the blues. Keep coming back, Lord. What do you got to lose? Well, I walk the road of thunder. I walk the road of pain. Yeah, my ego got the best of me. And now life is living in vain. It's when I hit rock bottom, hopeless in defeat. That old man took my hand and put me from up above, keep coming back.